Free FM.
Here you can be free.
Penn Jillette.
That's the Mike Jones Enormous Orchestra playing the Penn Jillette theme, recorded right here in the Slammer in my house. I'm playing the upright bass. I'm banging the doghouse on that, and it's Jimmy Mack who is playing guitar. Jimmy Mack, who is I think the finest guitar player in Las Mama Vegas, Mia. And plays in Mamma Mia, which is humiliating. Yep. But he sometimes comes over here and lets loose with some good. I haven't seen Mamma Mia, so I don't even know. But it must
I'm
be
staying
awful.
Out of it. My wife was in it. I am not making comments.
She's out of it now.
She's out of it now.
She can talk about
it. She might be going back. She's talking about going back now.
Is she really?
She's thinking about it.
Okay. Well, we're broadcast in Vegas, so be careful. Just say, but my wife always loved
I love Mamma Mia when my wife is starring in it.
Oh, yeah. She's very good. You know, even I, who I'm not a big fan of musicals, great American art form, even though I'm not a big fan of musicals, when... Teresa Goudeau is in Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
There's no better show in Las Vegas. Okay? You done?
Thank you.
You owe me.
Thank you. Cut that clip.
Okay.
Put that on my zip drive.
We are here with a very, very special Penn Jillette show today. PennRadio.com. PennRadio@gmail.com. That's Penn with two N's. We have Wendy Liebman here. And you know, Wendy, this is... I'll tell you more about how great Wendy Liebman is. But the most amazing thing, and this is so humiliating on our part, we have been doing the show since January 3rd, and you are the first woman we've had in the studio.
No way. There has been
a marked lack of estrogen in here.
You didn't even have Mamma Mia, the
Mamma Mia. No.
They weren't all here. We have not had any women whatsoever.
I don't have any estrogen because I'm going through menopause.
Oh, are you really?
Speaking of musicals.
Have you seen Menopause, the musical?
I haven't. You know what? I have my own hot flashes, and I'm like, no. I don't even like the vagina monologues.
You saw that?
I saw that once. Actually, I don't even think I saw it. I read it, and I thought, I do not want to see this.
I don't think they actually show you. If they were showing you,
now
the
that's
vagina.
Annie Sprinkles.
Yeah, that's Annie Sprinkles. Have you seen Annie Sprinkles?
I saw it on Real Sex. I saw her on Real Sex.
See, I've seen Annie live, and Annie
up
live,
close and personal.
Annie Sprinkles doing her show at one of those little grade schools. They turn into a performance art place in New York.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I saw
it's
Annie.
It's like been a minute, and I'm already talking vaginas.
Well, you have a large burden, so to speak, because you are the first woman we've had on. You're speaking now for all women. There are, certain listeners, they get all their information from our show. So this is the first time they've heard a woman talk. It's very, very exciting.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
We have talked about women on the show quite a bit. But Wendy Liebman was on, and I'm going to say this about you because everybody thinks you're really, really funny. There's no doubt about that. Anyone that saw you in The Aristocrats thought you were really funny. But we had Wendy on Sin City Spectacular, which was our show on FX that lasted, people say, the short-lived. But we did actually a whole season.
24 episodes.
Well, actually, I did 26.
But really?
Yeah.
Excuse me? What are you talking about?
You were there.
I remember shows that no one else remembers. I was talking to Teller about this, and Teller was insisting we did 24. I was saying 26, and I was naming guests that we never had on, and situations that never happened. But I was I was frenzied during that time.
It was a lot of work.
And we had on, who did we have on? We had on like Perfect 10 Girls or something, or mm-hmm. Playmates. Mm-hmm. And you were ready to go on and do your monologue.
Mm-hmm.
And we were standing backstage, and I was going to go out and introduce you. And then you were going to go on and be really, really funny.
Right.
And there was a woman who took her top off
right. And
her bra off.
Mm-hmm.
And she was there on our stage.
Was it me?
Cavorting. Was that?
No, was it me?
And we were backstage, and Wendy looked out and said that you had a better body than the playmate, and I believe it's true.
I was drunk. No, I don't drink.
But have you ever drank?
You know, probably in high school.
Yeah, when you're supposed to.
Peer pressure. You know what? I was the peer pressure. but yeah, no, I don't drink because I want to set a good example for my stepkids.
Now, how long have you been a mom to your stepkids?
I've been with them about 8 years. I've been married for 3, but I've been with them for six years. I don't know. I'm 45 now. Whatever. A long time. But they still don't know who I am. They still just think I'm the woman in the kitchen who can't cook, who can drive them to band practice.
And did you like coming into a family pre-made?
You know what? I really I fell in love with my husband, and then I fell in love with my kids. And it really was love at first sight.
And you miss the joy of
stretch marks and
birth.
And breastfeeding. You know what? I would have breastfed because I don't know how to cook. But even my dog is like eating out. But I don't have a dog. But I love being a stepmom. I walk a fine line with my kids, though, between trying to be friends with them and asking them for money. It's very tenuous. And we have a swear jar. I can't swear here, right?
Well, no. you could probably use it. Can you use a synonym?
We have this swear jar that every time we swear, we have to put a penny in the jar. And then at the end of the year, we take all the money and we go to the frickin' Riviera. You know, it just doesn't work as well. But I know why people don't like the F word, Penn.
Why is that?
Because it sounds angry. Like, I think it's scary. People think that you're going to do something radical or scary. So I say it very sweetly now. And you can get so much mileage from saying.
And the aristocrats, the version that Wendy told was the aristocrats is a joke that's very simple. You just tell the most disgusting series of acts you possibly can, and then you ask, what is an act like that called? And the punchline is the aristocrats. And it's just a simple high-low joke in a turnaround. And we went in to record Wendy doing it, and she used no obscenity whatsoever and told a very, very similar to Stephen Wright in a certain way, told it all eating strawberries with cream and playing Mozart and so on.
Ball or making a pie.
And then what do you call an act like that? And then was the obscenity. So you just did it exactly.
You were freaking out though, right?
I was freaking out. I had no idea what you were doing. And we had to, shorten the pause because you stopped completely and then there's this long pause and I go, oh, what would you call an act like that? That's how far. If you look at the raw tape,
right.
That's how far behind you we are.
And you must have thought, we drove out for this?
Yeah, we just lost our minds entirely.
Mike Rowe, the comedian writer, lives across the street from us. And he said he saw you guys coming over and he was so jealous.
Oh, well, that's terrible.
I know.
See, that's the thing about the aristocrats. We got yelled at from a lot of people for not putting certain people in. But, you know, it was only people that we knew. We just went through our speed dialing on our cell phone. We did not talk to agents or managers. We did not talk to studios. It wasn't like a who's who's list of these are the ones we absolutely want to pick. They're just the people we liked. And there were a couple choices that we had their phone number and they're really popular comedians and Provenza and I just did not like them.
Who?
And they are in the movie.
But can I just tell you,
please,
being in that movie, well, first of all, it changed my life. Well, everything changes everything. But it really, especially when I'm in the doctor's office. I've had two doctors who have said to me, have you seen the original? You know, because they read the chart and they say comedian and they don't know me initially. And then they say, have you seen the aristocrats? Seen it. I'm in it. And then they're like, suddenly I am just a star.
How could they not recognize you?
I'm wearing that fake wig and
the aristocrats was actually good for your health care then. They're taking better care of you as a result.
I was just at this orthopedist and he was on the floor excited that I was in the and he was like, You were the one and then I knew that he wasn't gonna actually like look at my back. He was only gonna look at the X-ray and he came over and he looked at my back.
Wow.
So
wow.
Thank you, Penn.
Is your back okay now?
No, it's not. It's not okay.
What's right? You're not
but
big.
He was laughing a lot.
He was laughing.
He didn't actually cure you, but
even my X-rays were funny. I have a slipped vertebrae. It's an old cheerleading injury.
It is not.
It really freaking is. It is a... Well, dancing. I did a lot of dancing when I was younger. Not like the Macarena and stuff, but like
pole
jazz.
Dancing?
Yeah, mostly pole. No, jazz and a little.
And you
modern.
Hurt your. But you're how tall are you?
5'2".
See, I have my back is terrible. You know,
really?
My back is ripped to pieces. But I'm 6'6" and I'm 280 pounds. You're like 5'2" and 110. What do you mean?
You look great.
No, it's just you can't remember how fat I am. It's not. The problem is the poverty of your imagination. You just picture a big round globe. So the fact that I'm a little thinner than that, you go, oh, he's lost weight. But usually it's big people that get better. What cheer were you doing that injured you?
go big people. No, it was from a lot of like back bends. And anyway, I have a slipped vertebrae. There's some name for it, spondylolisthesis, something I can't even pronounce. But they said they could fuse my spine.
Oh, cool.
Or I could just get an epidural.
Uh-huh. And, permanent?
It's not permanent, but it might relieve. I mean, I've lived with this for 30
years. Are you in
years.
Constant pain?
You know what? It's not like nagging and annoying, but every once in a while I will move in a direction and it just...
Because I think constant pain is so sexy.
Okay, well then it's
constant pain. Just horrible.
But I do something called the Alexander technique. Have
you
heard of
that? Yeah, you wrote to me about
that. I've told
that.
You about that in the past, and it really has helped me, and it would help anybody.
No, there's nothing new agey or nutty about
this. No, like I remember when I initially told you about it, you were like very...
Well, the word technique after
well,
something that, you know, that does not have the word oral in front of it. I do not trust that word at all.
Well, that's so interesting that you say that, Penn, because I've actually told my teacher, I just call it Alexander now because I think technique sounds pretentious. Or...
Well, there's a basic rule that any science that has the word science after it is not a science. Computer science, social science. You know, you don't have physics science, chemistry science.
Fascinating.
So I think any technique that's a real technique doesn't have the word technique after it. You know, you don't have juggling technique, do you?
Me? No, I don't have any.
You're just reading your email, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I'm looking up the Alexander technique.
Oh,
you know,
please.
That's part of my job.
I have a link on my website.
Who was Frederick?
What is your website? I swear on that.
Give me when Bobby Slayton was here, he gave his website, as we were talking, in the middle of a joke, he would say BobbySlayton.com. Why don't you give out your website?
It's my name, WendyLiebman.com.
Uh-huh.
And it's just... I have some jokes on there. It's nothing fascinating.
Give the web address.
www.
Don't go there. That's what you say. WendyLiebman.com.
Yeah, forget about it.
Now, how much are you on the road now?
It's on and off. This month I'm on the road 2 weeks out of the month.
Now, do you did you go on the road a lot less once you got married? Was that the idea?
I did, and I love being home. I actually love doing laundry. I said now, you know, I thought I was going to be an old maid because I got married later in life. But now I'm married, so now I'm a maid. I love domesticate. I love being a homebody. So if I never had to leave the house again, that would
be great. And where are you from?
That would be great. I'm originally from Long Island,
but
I live in L.A. now. I live in Studio City. I live right... between where Robert Blake shot his wife and where he lived.
So you were on the roof?
But I was in Denver.
Okay.
I was nowhere.
Having lunch with a nun.
Right. I have a list for you.
Okay.
This is a list of things that my stepson wanted me to ask you to look at for your show.
Okay.
For BS. Is that okay?
Sure.
Is that all right?
Okay, sure.
Okay. He said anti-global warming politicians.
Okay, well, we might be on the other side of that one. It seems like when he's saying there's a lot of – you have to remember you're doing everything backwards, okay? Because the show is both hit. And so the stuff that we're talking about is stuff that is usually jive. So he's talking about anti-global warming politicians, which means politicians that are against global warming or politicians that don't believe in global warming. Both of those could be
I don't know.
That sentence could be both sides of the issue.
Well, he's a teenager. He's confused.
See, Al Gore, if he's a teenager, then he probably is buying the whole global warming hype because it's marketed mostly. I mean, right. Al Gore's got that movie out.
He was on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, and it's okay. So that's the market they're going for. But the point of view I might take on that is that global warming might not be anthropogenic. We're not sure it's anthropogenic. It might just be, you know, we've been going through an ice age. Patrick Moore explains this. He's one of the founders of Greenpeace that's now turned very much against them. And he was explaining that, you know, a few million years ago, both poles of mm-hmm. the world were tropical. You know, mm-hmm. we are coming out of a very cold time. So it's possible the Earth is just warming on its own. So there's a lot to talk about there. But we're afraid global warming... there was that whole article about who wrote that? Michael Crichton had the speech that he gave where he talks about environmentalism as a religion. So we might be on the other side of that. But go ahead with the next one.
Michael Crichton went to my high school.
Did he really?
Or I went to his high school. We're different ages. And
is it called Michael Crichton?
He's a lot taller.
High?
It should be. Because everybody
Michael Crichton's
there
also a tall guy.
I've heard that.
Probably got back problems.
If only he knew. Yeah.
He said, what the was with that guy with the fake dog balls? He wanted to know. Nudicles or something.
Nudicles, yeah.
Yeah.
We were on the floor.
I have someone wrote in about that and said that, and this killed me. It was Gid, you know, who wrote the wonderful atheist letter to Katie Couric. Gid wrote to me and said, the thing you didn't cover on that show, because it was such a hard-hitting show, Gid said, the thing you didn't cover is those nudicles are actually used for fraudulent purposes. In order to have a dog show, in order for your dog to win, your dog must be able to breed. And sometimes you neuter a dog that actually turns out to be show breed. And because the judges are going to feel the testicles of the dog to show it can reproduce, you put these back in, and then the judge is fooled, and so dogs that cannot breed have won best of breed, and this is a horrible thing in dog shows. And you present it as though it was completely cosmetic. It's not cosmetic. It is actually a scam, a ripoff. It is fraud. And I said, we weren't exactly praising him. You know, we were kind of making fun of him. He goes, it's not just something to make fun of. It's really serious because judges feeling dog balls cannot tell the difference. And therefore, they cheat because a dog that wins has to be able to breed. So tell that to your son. That's what's with the guy.
But they could also do porn.
Yes, exactly.
He thought maybe you did this show, The Patriot Act.
We didn't actually do The Patriot Act per se. We did it like a Big Brother show. And mostly our point was that the government is so incompetent at watching us that it kind of gives us some freedom. You know, it seems like as the major thing that's keeping us as free as we are is government incompetence. If the government was really good, the stuff they want to do is very, very evil. But they're not really able to do it very well.
Would you ever run for office?
You know, we haven't had an out-of-the-closet atheist in public office in a very long time. And I think that would stop. Also, I really think that the most important – you don't want a loose cannon to be your candidate. And I'm too much of a nut. And although I believe passionately in things, and I think that, you know, I do my research and I try to know what I'm talking about, I still, when you come right down to it, I'm a nut. And I think I prefer to be a nut, and my position is nut.
Say the F word.
Just don't say the F word. We're going to be back after this and try again to avoid saying the F word on Free FM.
And my website.
At your website. You say the F word on your website?
No, but I mean try to avoid that too.
Okay. WendyLiebman.com.
I'm already there.
Here. This is Penn Jillette sitting here with Michael Goudeau. The theme song there being played by Mike Jones alone, not the Humongous Orchestra. If you want to hear more of the Penn Jillette theme and also the theme from Monkey Tuesday, you can go to pennradio.com, PennRadio.com. And while you're surfing, go to WendyLiebman.com. She has jokes there, and Wendy Liebman's our guest. And so are you still touring, right? But just not as much. And are you still, are you trying to phase? What's your husband do? What's your husband do for
He's them? A writer.
Like television?
He wrote on a show
Horseback.
Called Boy Meets World,
oh, okay.
Which is a sitcom.
On what show?
It was called Boy Meets World.
Okay, yeah.
And then
that.
He's written a lot of movies for like Fox Family and the Disney Channel.
Oh,
and
he has two kids.
He's from a Disney family, actually. His father and uncle wrote a lot of the music for Disney. They wrote Mary Poppins. And,
oh, wow.
Oh, really? Mary Poppins is just an awful movie.
But the music.
Yeah, the music was nice. Yeah,
music
really.
They wrote Spoonful of Sugar for my husband.
What are you talking about?
Well, because he came home from school when he was like 8 years old, and his father said, "What did you do today?" And he said, "I took the Salk vaccine." And his father said, "How did they get you to do that?" And he said, "They put it on a sugar cube, and they put the sugar cube on a spoon." And his father was like, "Uh-huh, spoonful of sugar." So
wow.
That's that story.
Wow.
I know.
And he also it was his father that also worked a lot with the LSD, the early LSD movement. Just a cube full of sugar.
Yeah, right.
Makes the Grateful Dead sound good.
Exactly.
Makes the Grateful Dead sound good.
Well, he wrote, I shouldn't even say this on the air, but he wrote It's a Small World After All, and he was manic depressive. So you can hear that. It's a world of laughter, a world of tears, a world of hope, and a world of fears.
Sure.
So, but he also wrote You're 16, You're Beautiful in Your Mind.
You're kidding me.
No.
Wow, that's amazing.
So
he's also a pederast.
Well.
Yeah, so it's a world of junkies, a world of dope. It's a world without God, so there is no hope. Isn't that one of the verses?
Yeah. on E-Bomb's World or something.
There's really nothing, no piece of music in the world that's considerably worse than It's a Small World.
Well.
But the checks keep rolling.
But I like
in.
The ride. You
it's
know what?
Action-packed.
I was on that ride, and in the boat behind me was my dentist. And I thought, wow, they are so right. It is a small world after all. Oh, my God. I got them to laugh. But, no, the checks keep coming for him, not for me. But
you're married to him, right?
Well, I'm married to my husband.
Oh, right.
This
yeah,
is
this
my is, my father-in-law.
But just,
yeah.
Obviously, you have sex with your father-in-law.
Of course.
Of course. I mean,
at least,
it's
at least,
a Disney family.
At least on Christmas and Easter.
Sure, of course. So you're telling me that this is insane to me, that a heterosexual man wrote the music for Mary Poppins and It's a Small World?
Well, two heterosexual men, because he wrote it with his brother.
You're kidding me.
No, but this is really interesting.
I would have bet my life that was written by gay men, those songs. Now, You're 16, You're Beautiful, You're Mine, I don't think it has to be written by a gay man.
Can
but...
we go to a different topic now? For some reason, I knew I should. Oh, I'm such a big mouth.
What else did he write?
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Okay. And Iron Man for Black Sabbath.
Hey, I married into it.
Okay. Were you a Disney fan before that?
Not really. Although I wanted to be Julie Andrews when I was little because I loved the Sound of Music.
Uh-huh. You run up a hill and the helicopter
shot?
I
was a nun.
Is that how you met your husband?
That's how I met my husband. Was I a Disney? Not really. But I've always been very musical. Like when I was younger, I was I was in My Fair Lady when I was much younger, like high school.
What are you talking about? You were in...
I did a lot of theater.
Oh, you mean like a local production?
Yeah.
Okay, I was trying to picture you where you were in my field.
No.
Not that I've ever seen it because I'm a straight man, but I was
right.
Trying to picture you in there somewhere. So you did a lot. You're a good singer?
You know what? I have sung in the past, mm-hmm. And if I could sing, I wouldn't do stand up comedy.
Oh, that's
but,
yeah,
I would love to sing. Yeah, so that's my dream, actually.
You know, John Lennon said in several interviews that he felt that. if he were brave enough to get out from behind the mic and the mic standing in front of him and the guitar, he would do stand-up comedy.
No way.
He did a lot of stuff like that. So John Lennon considered himself to be a failed stand-up comedian who had fallen back on the Beatles. And there you are, a failed singer falling back on comedy.
If I could channel John Lennon. But in January, I was on The Tonight Show, and the guests were the three judges from American Idol.
Uh-huh.
And Simon Cowell actually said to me that stand-up comedy would be the hardest profession ever. So I was very flattered.
Oh, really? Did you sing for them?
No, but I, you know, they said, both Randy and Simon said that Paula never laughs at anything, but then she heard me sing.
See, I don't know anything about the whole American Idol cult. I mean, you watch it, right, Godot?
My wife does, yeah.
Yeah, my wife has parties over at our house using my TiVo and my high-def TiVo. She uses and brings over all sorts of people to watch.
Does she vote?
I don't know if she. I never asked her. It costs money to vote, doesn't it? You vote for free?
I've never voted, but it's free.
And what were the numbers? And what are the numbers in a typical American Idol?
You mean how many people vote?
Yeah.
I think it was like 53 million.
Yeah. So it isn't as many as vote in the election.
More.
There's always those rumors. No, it's not. It's not even close.
How many people vote in the election?
Okay. Well, somebody knows.
Okay. Somebody knows.
It's got to be more than 53 million. There are 300 million people in the United States.
Oh, okay.
300 million.
And I still can only get 100 to my show.
And when you go out on tour, do you go out for multiple weeks at a time, or you just
just for the weekend? Like I was just in San Francisco, where I opened for Joy Behar on the road.
Uh-huh. Is that a treat?
It was really fun.
Have you been on The View?
I have not been on The View.
The View was the worst experience of my life. I would go on The View, and they would hate me. I would walk out to do a magic trick, and the loathing that would come off them was astonishing. And I would try to be nice, and then I get into a huge fight with, you know, Bonnie Hunt?
Yeah.
Yeah, Bonnie Hunt
I don't know her personally.
As a guest host, right?
Yeah.
And she was explaining, I was talking about magnetic therapy and how it doesn't work. It was just a setup for a stupid trick we were doing, right?
Right.
But I'm talking about that because it was one of the episodes of BS, and I was doing the chat on that. And Bonnie says, well, no, those magnetic bracelets actually work. And we have proof of that. And I said, well, I don't actually think we do. And then she explained how MRIs worked and explained it incorrectly. And I said, well, she said it pulled all the red blood cells toward the surface so they could be photographed. And I went, no, that's not how it works. And she said, you just can't take scientific information coming from a woman. I was a nurse. I know this stuff. I know more than you. You're uneducated, and you're unable to accept information coming from a woman. And I said, are you high? Because that's the way I've been taught to debate.
Right.
And it turned really, really nasty.
Ugly.
Really
was this
nasty.
On the air?
Yes, it was on the air. And then she went on Letterman that night and said, I was explaining to Penn Jillette on The View how MRIs work. And Letterman went, but you're totally wrong. So Dave was a good friend of hers. And so then everything changed. We'd been on The View twice, and they hated us. I'm not sure they hated Teller. It seemed to be really directed hate toward me. I mean, just everything about me, everything about my personality was just wrong for The View. They loathed me.
They loved you on car. Oh, I'm sorry. I cut you off.
But then Moxie came along, my daughter. And last Halloween, my daughter was whatever she was, 4 months old. We dressed her in a lobster suit because we know that middle-aged women cannot resist a little baby dressed as a crustacean. So we dressed her in a lobster suit for Halloween. And we carried her on, and it was like night and day. I had a daughter. There was some sort of humanity. And all of a sudden, I was their favorite guest. And the tricks worked. And it wasn't like kicking a dachshund uphill. It was just like being around people who were loving and open. It was like I joined the club, you know?
I know.
Before that, I was like some evil wild man. And as soon as I had a daughter, you know, and, you know, Teller's out there. You know, Teller's got his coat loaded with all sorts of stuff to do tricks, and he's been practicing forever. And, you know, the whole thing.
Looking at the shellfish.
And her name is Moxie. How cute. cute, how cute, how cute. And tell her, you know, he's got, you know, five aces bombed and get the whole thing ready to go. We get this whole thing rehearsed. Didn't get to it. We went on again, you know, and I thought, well, that's a fluke. But just in case, let's bring Moxie.
So dressed as a shrimp?
We sat, my wife, yeah, she always has to be dressed as some,
shellfish.
Something trafe. We have to dress our daughter as something trafe. So maybe this year she'll be a pork chop or bacon. And we brought her on, and it was supernatural.
I think I need a baby.
Yeah. They did like one part. They did like one part of the interview, right? They go, so you guys are playing over at the Rio, and that was wonderful, Cups and Balls. And is it that your baby in the front row? Is that your baby? And then they turn the cameras around. It's on my wife and Moxie, and they come in close on Moxie, and Moxie giggles like a little baby and looks around, and they're all, oh, and that is the airtime, you know? And I have, like, jokes to do. We've got tricks to do. Who cares?
Who cares?
So next time we go on The View, we are doing a trick with Moxie. We have a magic trick that Moxie can do. I'm going to dress her in a little gray suit that matches me and tell her. We can't
lose
this.
Does she need
to
sign a consent form?
She does not have any consent. I can push her out. I figure it's okay to exploit your child up until the age of
18.
Make all the money you can up until then and then just move on.
Well, I've never been on The View. But I saw you on Carson Daly, and you did a trick there.
Yeah, that we did a trick there.
You did it. There was somebody else on the show. Well,
I forgot.
Yeah, I forgot. But they loved you.
Oh, the show that we were taping, we taped that show. I forget who was on it. But the show after ours, as we were leaving that we're taping, was George Clinton and the Funkadelics.
Oh.
And I just loved that the Funkadelics still show up on these shows and do stuff. It was really, really cool. We've got Wendy Liebman here. We're going to have Wendy Liebman some more. Because, you know, why shouldn't we have you? Everybody else has. We'll be back after this. This is Penn Jillette, Mike Goodell, and WendyLiebman.com. She now has WendyLiebman.com tattooed across her forehead. Kind of a Charlie Manson. We'll be back. You know, that pause in the bass line, that really nice pause, is because I was reading the music that Jonesy wrote. There were a lot of little fast notes in there, and I couldn't read them, so I just kind of slid over it. Sounds exactly like I meant it, doesn't it? This is Penn Jillette, PennRadio.com, PennRadio@gmail.com, here with WendyLiebman.com, and talking about stuff. You know, I wanted to talk about this because... In the movie The Aristocrats, we talked with Phyllis Diller and we talked with Whoopi Goldberg a lot about women in comedy and their position. Mm-hmm. And then we went to talk to you, and you did this perfect little epigrammatic bit so that your sex, your gender had nothing to do with it. Except I think that you looking sweet and innocent helped the punchline pay. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it made no difference. And you talked to me, and this is years ago when you were doing Sin City, you talked a little bit about how you played down the fact that you had a sexy body to do comedy. And that seems so weird to me because... Mm-hmm. Male comics, you know, if any of them were good looking, I mean, Steve Martin, you know, people like that, try to play that up. And did you feel you had to play down the sexuality to be funny?
I remember talking to you about this.
But you were lying.
No. I feel like the less the audience can sexualize me, the more room there is for imagination. Like, I don't want them to be looking at me thinking, are they going to be attracted to me or not? Like, I try to be as androgynous, I think, on stage.
But do you believe that that was a personal choice, or is that a career choice? I mean, do you think that that's what the audience wants, or is that what you wanted? Was there something you didn't want to deal with that or something?
I think it helps the audience feel more comfortable with me. Like, I'm not threatening, I think.
But, I mean, Sarah Silverman
certainly
plays the sexuality to the hilt.
Mm-hmm. But she's sexy.
Well, yeah.
But she's beautiful and sexy and
hilarious.
But she's making
that choice.
Yeah.
No,
Well, you know, I've been doing comedy 20 years, so I've dressed every possible way, and I think
chicken I've, suit.
Not the chicken suit, but I do wear a lobster outfit. But I think on Sin City, I actually wore a dress, which I usually wear just a skirt or jeans and some big shirt because I don't want the attention on my body, I guess. But although I talk about my body. And I remember talking to you about this. I try to make myself look flat.
I know. That's amazing. You would do jokes in your show about being flat-chested when you aren't by any means flat-chested, right? Mm. You just think there were better flat-chested jokes and there were large-breasted jokes or medium-breasted jokes?
I think women don't want to know that if you have breasts or not.
So in order to get the female following, you were strapping yourself in like Carrie Fisher in Star Wars?
Yeah, like Hilary Swank in Boys Don't Cry.
Okay, I have another one, like Judy Garland in Somewhere Over the Rainbow in Wizard of Oz. Now it's your turn.
Like you.
I do. I try to keep.
But what you said to me when we had this conversation was, you can make the audience believe anything by presenting yourself a certain way.
Yeah, it's also amazing that just stating things. And I guess there's a magician that I'm not fond of. I don't know if I'm going to say his name or not. I'll decide as I go on.
Does he juggle?
Who does? No, he does not. Who does psychic stuff, you know? And one of the techniques he uses, it's the most interesting technique I've ever seen in magic. And it's so slimy that I've seen it work. He does a thing where he puts a blindfold on, right? And then he has what's called billets in the magic business, but it's actually pieces of paper that someone's written a question on and folded it up. Right. Mm-hmm. And the way you do billet readings is, if anybody puts a blindfold on you, you can see right down by your nose. You don't even have to have a big nose. You can see right down by your nose without even gimmicking the blindfold at all. Tie a blindfold on someone, they can see down in front of them. So what you do is you open the billet, the pieces of paper that's folded up secretly in your hand, and then you bring your hand in close and you can read it right off your hand. And the most amazing thing is that he came out and said, you know, I'm going to put a blindfold on so I can't see, and I have these pieces of paper given to me, and, you know, some people think I just look down by my nose and read the piece of paper, and that's simply not true. And then went on to do that method. And I thought, man, this is the Louis Pasteur of, you know, just stating. It's like you walking out and going, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, I have small breasts. And they go, she looks like she's packing at least 34 C's.
Well, I stuff them. So if you got to second base, you'd find that the bases were loaded. But you know what? I have a question for you based on that.
Sure.
This guy came up to me and he was like trying to scam me on the sidewalk. And he said, give me two numbers that you're thinking of. And first he wrote two numbers down and he gave me the piece of paper and I was holding it. And then he said, pick two numbers. And I said 4 and 23. Mm-hmm. And I opened it up and it said 4 and 23. And I'm like, how the did you do that? Like,
it's nice when you do your own blipping. Your own.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to. You know, I don't. They don't want to work that hard. So, but how did he do that? Blown away.
I think that probably using Occam's razor, which is the simplest explanation, is the one that's correct, the one with the fewest number of steps. I think you met Jesus on the street, because that's the major power that
Jesus
had.
He was Indian.
He was Indian. Okay. Yeah.
So, and he smelled.
Do you mean Slurpee Indian or Casino Indian?
Slurpee Indian.
Slurpee Indian. And he smelled? Or you mean he stank?
He stank.
And what he smelled
of,
too.
What kind of stank?
Just old clothes.
And why was he talking to you on the sidewalk?
I was waiting for my car. Outside of...
On the sidewalk?
Outside of Jerry's
dangerous.
Deli.
David Blaine does not smell good. Was it David Blaine?
No.
And he does look kind of Indian. I mean, here's a guy who is Jewish, who claimed to be Puerto Rican in order to get famous. That's David Blaine.
I did a radio show, and he was a call-in guest. Uh-huh. And he was just like, yeah, That's cool.
But let's get back to this. I mean, if you really want to know.
Okay, yes.
You have to be, and I don't mean to be in any way insulting, but there's some question I have to ask you. Because one of the things magicians do is try to get you to misremember details. They push really hard on that.
Okay.
So you've said some things that I just want to make sure are absolutely true.
Sure.
He wrote down the numbers, handed you the paper, and then never touched it again. Are you positive of that?
100% positive.
Positive of that.
100%.
Did he repeat the procedure afterwards? Did he tell you what he had done before he had you open it? Did he say, I wrote that down in advance, I gave it to you,
no.
And I haven't touched it since?
No.
And you held it in your hand?
I had it in my hand.
You said he said to name two numbers.
Yeah, right.
Now,
he said the first one between 1 and 10.
Okay, that's very, very important.
Okay,
very
okay,
important.
Okay.
You left out this whole hump. He didn't just say name two numbers. So you could not have said 186,000 and 4,700,000.
Right.
He said, what were the exact directions he gave?
Pick a number between 1 and 10.
Pick a number between 1 and 10. Is that what he said?
Yeah.
He didn't say favorite number?
No.
Did he give you any other recommendations like don't pick one of the obvious ones? Did
no.
he say anything like that? Pick a number between 1 and 10. That's what he said.
Right.
And you picked 4.
Right.
Are you remembering that the numbers are exactly what you would those were the real numbers you picked?
Yes.
You did pick 4. You're not saying, for instance, 4.
No, it was 4.
You picked 4. And he didn't say anything about even or odd?
Nope.
Or don't go for the obvious ones?
Nope.
Did he give you an example?
Nope.
Like pick a number between 1 and 10, like 7?
Nope.
You sure he didn't say that?
Positive.
Positive.
Yeah.
Pick a number between 1 and 10.
Yeah.
That's what he said. That's
mm-hmm.
all he said.
Right.
Okay. You're waiting for your car. Guy tells you pick a number. You say, why the hell not?
Right.
Right. He's already written it down.
Right. Already
okay.
wrote it down.
Already wrote it down. And then what was the directions for the second one?
And then the second number, pick any number between. No, pick any number. Pick any number.
Any number.
I mean, any number.
He didn't say two-digit.
Nope.
He didn't say anything. And you picked 4?
23.
4 and 23.
Right.
He didn't say pick two numbers that add up to 27.
No, because what I was thinking was if I had picked 6 or something, he could have pointed to the 23 and said, see, 2 times 3 is 6.
Right, but there was no out at all.
Nope.
Only 3 numbers on the page written in a way that you could see clearly 4 and then you could see, clearly see 23.
The only odd thing.
Ah!
No, here's the odd thing.
Besides the fact that he smelled like 4, he smelled like number 4. Besides that, what are the other things?
The odd thing is he didn't let me keep the piece of paper. Like after I unraveled it and freaked out that he had picked my numbers and had given it to me before he told them to me,
yeah.
He took it back.
See, there's a thing that there are many ways to do what you describe. But if you're remembering everything absolutely accurately.
It happened so fast.
Of course it happened fast. And that's why I'm saying, Wendy, you're very, very smart for
I
a woman.
I felt scammed
and I think
for a woman. Well, I'll take that as a compliment.
And I don't think, but you know, people, I've seen people watch videotapes of what happened after they describe
right.
what happened, and there's hardly ever an overlap. I know several ways of the trick you described, but not exactly the way you're describing it. So, using Occam's razor, the two things that are possible. One, you're misdescribing or misremembering something,
right.
which I see is very unlikely. And two, you met Jesus, dressed as a smelly Indian on the streets of L.A. Because if I were Jesus, what I would be doing is number magic tricks to Wendy Liebman on the streets of L.A. while smelling really, really bad. Is that the possibility?
He's God.
He's God. Okay. Not Jesus. I forgot we were talking. You believe there's a difference there. See, I believe that Jesus is God. They are both the
same. You don't believe in anything,
though. Neither of them. So they're exactly the same to me as God is my witness.
What do you believe in?
I believe in love and puppies and Wendy Liebman.
.com.
Go there. Check it out. Wendy Liebman. Thanks a lot. This is Penn Jillette on Free FM saying, well, in honor of your father-in-law, ta-ta.
Check out Penn Jillette weekdays from 2 to 3 on Free FM.